Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Fodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Focus on Fuels. I'm your host, Alex Hodes, with my colleague, Trevor McClanahan. What's going on, man?
Not too much, man. We've been traveling quite a bit, so we've had a little bit of a hiccup in our cadence here on doing our podcast, but we're back at it today, and we got quite a bit to talk about.
And honestly, we haven't missed too much in the market the past few weeks regarding kind of where diesel, gasoline, crude oil markets have been.
Yeah, I think we left off at a good spot where, you know, OPEC was bringing back a bunch of production. Just to kind of rehash that, OPEC brought back their entire amount of their voluntary cuts of 2.2 million barrels a day. They're going to start bringing that completing that production increase in September. What was the latest increase? It was over 400,000 barrels, I believe.
It was 450, if I'm correct.
Yeah, that sounds right. They're going to bring back that in September. And that's kind of adjusted everybody's gauge to some degree on what the oil fundamentals are going to look like for 2026. And everybody's projecting a glut in 2026, thinking the prices could get down in the low 60s and maybe below that. And then, you know, we've been bouncing around between that. And that really brought the market down hard, down to around $62 a barrel on WTI. And then, you know, there was this from the beginning of the month, we started around 69. So it really tapered off, fell to that low. But now we're kind of on the other side of that. And these Indian secondary tariffs have kind of gained the spotlight again and inflated the market a little bit as of August 25th today. So what do you think on these Indian the secondary tariffs with Russia? What is your perspective on how effective this will be?
Yeah, I think sanctions have been in place on several countries, including Russia, Iran, and we've kind of made these threats towards China and India. And thus far, we haven't really seen a huge change in the actual supply-demand balance, because there are still these incentives for some buyers to either conceal where they're buying this crude oil from or just mixing it up with doing some ship-to-ship transfers anyways to kind of circumvent those sanctions. And I think that's going to continue. But we have seen recently some of the Indian refiners are kind of looking elsewhere to some other Middle Eastern suppliers. But it's kind of coming at a good time for those Asian buyers like India and China, because now there's a lot more Middle East crude oil supply. So it's kind of a balance there. They're kind of looking to diversify just to not have to go through as many of these hurdles. But I think it's more of a headline than anything. And I think that we've been in kind of a very reactive market of when some supportive headlines coming on, some of those hedge funds and managed money is just a little bit more reactive. WTI hedge fund investors are extremely short right now. So that kind of provides you with a little bit of a floor there to where if stuff gets extremely bearish, there's a risk for a reversal there.
Yeah, definitely. And there's been, you know, the market in general is kind of in this new range now. So the 60s is kind of that new spot where we're seeing it, and it's just kind of bouncing back and forth between those ranges. So as I said before, you know, right when OPEC came out with their announcement of increasing, touched the high 60s, and then we fell right back down to once they came out with their announcement down to the low 60s. So regardless of kind of what happens, shakes out of this, like you said, there's going to be more barrels coming back online regardless, coming from the Middle East. And I think that ultimately these, it's headline driven, like you said, and it will, India's given us complete mixed messaging on whether or not they're going to, you know, really follow through with stopping purchasing of Russian crude, which we kind of find doubtful. And, you know, it seems like unless Trump can get a agreement done this week or at least gain some ground with kind of how that whole scenario is working out, we're probably going to just see, you know, lower to, you know, $65 a barrel is probably a good level where there's some resistance at that. But there's also a pretty strong support level right at 60 for now until we get into it later on in the year.
And I think transitioning now over towards kind of the fall seasons and then winter, we're kind of at that tail end of the summer, you know, fall season's underway. We're starting to look ahead towards what the weather's going to look like. That's going to be kind of, you know, down the road, because obviously heating demand is huge for both heating oil and propane. And then in addition to that, more of the agricultural cycle of harvesting. And on some certain years, this can account for a large amount of diesel demand. And it is kind of the swing factor at that time of the year. And in the Midwest pad two specifically, diesel demand by end use, it in the agricultural sector can account for over 10% of total diesel demand for that region. For the US as a whole, it's around 7%. So it's by no means a very small portion of the market. Obviously there's that base level demand of there's industrial, a lot of trucks. I mean, that's the majority of the diesel demand.
Very consistent, right? Mm-hmm.
But what we're doing today is we're bringing on our chief commodities economist, Arlen Suderman, and he's going to discuss with us a lot more about kind of what to expect on the harvest side of things, as well as crop drying. So for propane demand, so that's kind of a smaller portion of propane demand, but nevertheless, for Conway, Kansas propane, it's a little bit more of an important factor to take into account.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important for us to talk before Arlen gets on just about the basic fundamentals of what's going on in the petroleum side of things, because he's more of a focus on, you know, the ag side of it. So right now we're seeing some pretty light refinery turnarounds in the Midwest. The PNW, which is another pretty strong ag base up there, has one refinery that's going to be going down. It's going to take off about 20%, 20 to 23% of refinery capacity for about 2 months, starting in mid-September. So that will inflate basis out there some. They've got some odd carbon stuff that they, you know, drags the price around in some different direction, or the basis at least, around in a lot of different directions. But for the Midwest, it's broken out in two spots. So there's the Magellan, and the Group 3 is what that's considered as, and then the Chicago, where there's a bunch of different Big Ten pipelines, as I like to call them. All the Big Ten mascots are up there. So you got the Buckeye, the Badger, Wolverine, yeah, all those. So anyways, basically what we're seeing right now is in the Chicago region, there's almost no refinery turnaround season right now. They've got no maintenance scheduled so far. Now, there could be some unexpected ones. Actually, BP Whiting just went down this week, or last week, I'm sorry, due to some heavy rainfall. They had some flooding, but they seem to be back up and running up to status quo and should be good there. But outside of that, there's no maintenance expected here. Their inventories are significantly lower than they should be or typically are for the Chicago region. However, with there being no refinery maintenance, there could be a little bit of a bump in basis, but overall, I think they're in good shape. So that's okay, because there's typically a pretty heavy return maintenance season for the fall. As for the Group 3, so the Magellan, this is like the, you know, the very middle of our country, Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, North Dakota, both Dakotas, and then Minnesota as well, Missouri as well. There are two refinery turnarounds that are pretty relatively significant. Inventories are better in this region, though. So they should also be, there should be a little bit of an increase in basis, but I don't think it'll be dramatic as well, unless there's some unexpected breakdowns that happen from the refinery standpoint. But Flint does have one crude unit going down. And then there's another one, it might be El Dorado or one of those ones in southern Kansas.
El Dorado.
El Dorado, yeah. There you go. So anyways, basis should be relatively steady. As for both Midwest spots, I don't see anything that's alarming as of now. But you know, that's always unexpected. So you never know until we get there. So should be pretty steady though.
Yeah, I think that's, and there you go. That's kind of the supply side equation of this. And
absolutely,
now we
yeah.
come to, it's kind of a race before the heating demand season to see how much we can kind of rebuild these stocks. So
yeah.
Stocks overall tight, but, and I think Arlen will be able to provide us a little bit more color as to what to expect on kind of the ag demand side of things.
Yeah. So if you are a end user or even a jobber potentially, we like to go into the harvest season with full inventories. If you are hedging, that is, that way you can, have product there. And just in case of a rainy day, you never know what can happen. And there's obviously peak demand in that time period. So being prepared is very good for your, operation. It makes a lot of sense. And then also there's some money to be made there on the basis if you're looking to do that as well. So we'll let Arlen kind of take over from there and tell us what's going on in the ag world.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, everybody. We have our chief commodities economist here, Arlen Suderman. Thank you for joining us today.
You bet, Alex. Good to be here, part of your podcast. I've kind of listened and you've great information on here and just happy to be able to contribute.
Well, I appreciate it. So first, let's get going on what we have to see about harvest season coming up. For our listeners, we're kind of primarily focused on the energy space. So kind of if there's something as basic as it is, you can outline it for us. But really, we're kind of wondering this harvest season compared to previous years, what to expect?
Well, first of all, expect this to be a record harvest. We're going to have a record size of the corn and soybean crops coming in, and that's on top of a big wheat harvest. So that has some implications we can talk about as well. But just from the standpoint of harvesting this year's corn and soybean crops, it's going to take a lot of fuel to do so. The combines are going to be pushing hard, and that means the trucks are going to be pushing hard. It's going to take a lot of hauling, a lot of harvesting, a lot of diesel consumed just in bringing the crops out of the field.
And what about any kind of regional differences? What's kind of the outlook? Are there areas that are kind of doing a lot better than others? Are there some that are lacking? Where's kind of those dislocations and what kind of dynamics could that change?
It's kind of a flip from what we've seen in recent years. We've gone through now a series of years when the northwestern part of the Midwest has been dry. And so we've seen reduced yields in that area and the East has done better. This year kind of flips. We've got more problems in the East and the West is having a record year. Even areas in the Dakotas, probably going to have the biggest corn crop ever. Good soybean crops in that area as well. Minnesota, much of Minnesota is looking good. Yes, there are some problem areas. Yes, there are some drowned out spots. But overall, it looks like the bushels are going to be there. It's going to be a large harvest. Nebraska is looking really good. Even into Kansas, not necessarily known as one of the major production states, it can produce a lot of corn and soybeans. That looks to be the case this year as well. Maybe not as big as what it looked maybe a month ago, but certainly still a big crop. So overall, I think we're going to have our biggest storage problems in the northwestern Midwest and probably much less so in the East. And that has some implications for transportation.
Yeah, so some years, kind of depending on the amount of harvest, some of the down years or down years of harvest, there was almost a dip of almost 400,000 barrels per day of diesel demand. That was 2012, 2022. There's a lot of implications for this. Certain years also, Group 3 diesel basis. So Group 3 diesel prices have kind of held on to those higher prices when heading into kind of November or December. So is this year going to be one of those, is it substantially higher than previous years? Or, I mean, if you look at the trend of just the yields, it's constantly, you know, up and to the right every year, it seems like. Is this a substantial increase from the previous year, or is it just kind of like every year's a record year?
Well, we compare it to trend, and, okay, and there's been a lot of debate about trend. I use a 30-year trend yield, straight line trend, and that would put the national average corn yield this year at about 184.4 bushels per acre. USDA uses 181 bushels per acre. It's said that for the last 3 years in a row. So it's a flat trend, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because in recent years, we have struggled with yields. And that really goes back to the overall production of these crops. We tend to have a series of years back to back to back to back that are above trend. And then we have a series of years that back to back to back to back are below trend. And so this year looks to break that back into the above trend level. And so we have a lot of people trying to redefine trend based on where they're at. They, oh, we can no longer have high yields because we haven't in a while. Well, yes, we can. And I've found that my 30-year straight line works as well as anything. Now, if you look at USDA's estimated corn yield this year, 188.8 bushels per acre, that was as of August 1, and I think we've lost some potential since then. So I think it'll be lower, and that's a historical tendency. If you look at the last 32 years, I went back in the data, USDA's raised its corn yield 17 times in the August report. And I've always said big crops get bigger. So I look back at the data, that's not true. Out of those 17 years, it got bigger 5 years. Their final yield estimate was bigger than the August 5 years. It was smaller 11 years, and it matched it 1 year. And so big crops get smaller. How much smaller is the question? And that's still being determined, but overall, it still looks bigger. If you use USDA's 188.8 bushel yield, that's up about 5.3% from trend. If you look at the period from 2014 to 2018 or 19, we were generally above trend every one of those years, 3 to 5%. So we're within that realm of being above trend going back to where we were then. Even though it seems like a very, very high yield, it's not unprecedented by any means. And so does that mean we're now moving into a period where we're going to have successive big crops? Maybe. We'll have to wait and see, but that does stress our system. Now, other factors that go into this is how quickly does it mature? That's a factor. Weather, and right now the weather models are calling for above normal temperatures in September and October. We're cool right now, but they're calling for it to be above normal for much of September and October. They've been wrong for the last 6 months. Will they be right now? That's the key. I think the long-range models have had their toughest year in quite some time this year, but that's what we have to go off of, basically. Mm-hmm. And if we go back into a La Nina pattern, that would tend to support being warmer. That gives a more rapid dry down, so they can harvest it drier out of the field at a slower pace if they desire. But it means less drying costs then, or less fuel for drying. If it stays kind of cool like this, then that means it dries very slowly. They still try to get it out of the field before winter so they don't have harvest losses. And that means more drying. My bias right now is we should be able to get it out of the field with some good field drying and less fuel, even with a bigger crop. But that could certainly change quickly if we don't warm up again, as the forecasters are saying.
And does that time period kind of, what is kind of the variability of that time period? Like, what is the, I guess, the season for harvest? I know that probably changes regionally, but is there kind of a range that you can go off of?
Generally, if you look at last year, it was kind of a good, quick year. Most of the harvest took place in September and October, moving from south to north across the Midwest. And I would anticipate something similar this year. And the cool temperatures we have now are actually slowing that down. Had we not got this cold spell, we'd be at a much quicker pace, trying to speed things up in a quicker harvest, but that has slowed things down a little bit. But generally, you would anticipate that you get 90 to 95% of the crop harvested by mid-November. Certainly the hope to get it out of the field before the first snows start to fall. But we probably ought to talk about the storage problems too, because I think that's going to affect ground transportation. One of the keys that we're watching is the lack of a trade agreement with China. And last year, the current year that ends August 31st, China imported 841 million bushels of soybeans from the United States. That's been trending lower each year, basically, as China buys more and more soybeans from Brazil. Currency exchange rates are a big part of that, if Brazil's been expanding production, et cetera. But anyway, coming back to the United States, because of the tariff battles that we're in right now, China has bought zero soybeans for shipment. Typically, United States would have its big shipment period from September through January, and then China would have new crop supplies from Brazil. Brazil's producing big enough crops now, and the tensions between the United States and China are such that if China wanted to, it could buy zero soybeans from us, living off of its reserves plus what it's getting from South America. If you look at the 841 million bushels it bought from us this current year that's about to end, marketing year, about a 35% of those or so have already been booked from South America. So that's basically lost business. So we would anticipate, unless there's a trade deal soon, which we don't see any evidence of that, that forces them to buy more, we would anticipate that's already lost business. They could buy anywhere between that and zero. And those soybeans go out through the Gulf of Mexico, down the river on barges, or go by rail to the Pacific Northwest. And usually it takes both to get that kind of volume out. The rail bids are at zero, right? And there's simply no rail bids to haul soybeans. And so the Northwestern Midwest has a heavy rail market for selling those soybeans there. Simply not present. No bids for soybeans for selling to the farmers. And so that means it has to go into storage. A lot of facilities are saying, we're not going to pile soybeans on the ground. We don't have room. If we buy it, it'll be a cash-only basis. So storage is going to be a big problem. And so we're going to see there's lack of rail movement, so lack of fuel for rail going to the Pacific Northwest. But I do think we'll see an increase in truck as well as rail going to the south and the east. South and the eastern Midwest having a smaller crop, and so less storage problems. And so the cash basis market is going to try to move that grain, corn and soybeans, to the south and the east. And so there will be some increased fuel for doing that.
So if we're kind of having fewer buyers on China, you know, you're saying they're kind of stepping back quite a bit. Does that affect next year's planting, or is that kind of in the equation as well? Or how does that kind of work with regards to the planning of the farmers and planting or planting for next season?
It does. And I all the time hear from our Brazilian farmers who say, okay, at what price will the farmer in the United States not plant? And I tell them, well, the farmer will plant. It's what he does. Mm-hmm. And he has a sense of optimism that even though I could lose money at today's prices, something will happen to give me a price to sell. It's that eternal optimism that keeps him farming. And so he will plant. The crop mix is the question. Okay. If we were to get a trade deal before planting season that forces China to buy soybeans from us, then I would anticipate we'll see an increase in soybeans at the expense of corn for next year. Maybe a 2 to 3 million acre shift. So that would mean, you know, corn is very input intensive, which includes fuel. Mm-hmm. But if we do not get a trade deal, even with the strong domestic biofuel program that we have, that is limited by our crush capacity, which cannot expand quick enough to absorb all those bushels we're not exporting. In that case, we probably will see the farmer go ahead and plant corn because they feel like they can out yield their production costs. They have a better chance of getting a high yield like this year to offset the low price. And so they'll take their chances with corn, which of course would increase fuel consumption, input, fertilizer, et cetera.
Gotcha. And so now shifting kind of over to propane, you touched on it a little bit, but propane drying, crop drying is a portion of demand for propane, specifically in the Midwest. Conway, Kansas is the delivery point of that pad two focus Conway or propane contract. So you stated that you thought it could potentially be a little bit of an earlier harvest, so that might lead to less crop drying demand, but there's kind of some, we're still dependent on the weather there.
Well, it was earlier until we got this current cold spell, so that's kind of set it back, and so I'd say it's probably more normal or a little bit later, but still okay if we get the warm temperatures that come that the forecasts are currently calling for. And if that's the case, they can let it dry in the field, but we've been seeing a big increase in disease, particularly in the western Midwest, and so the real concern there is stock health of the stock of the corn. And if the disease starts to weaken that stock, it makes it vulnerable to when we get some of our fall systems that come through, the cold fronts come through with a lot of wind, it get lodging, and then you get harvest loss. And so farmers, if that happens, we get that stock weakness, they want to get it out and harvest it sooner rather than later, which means dry it. But as low as prices are, if we don't see that disease really weaken the stock, then they want to leave it in the field as long as possible to dry in the field, particularly if the temperatures are warm and air dry, to do that, because they don't want to pay drying costs on top of the low prices we already have. So the farmer's going to be trying to reduce his costs. Bottom line, if the stock health holds, they're going to leave it in the field to try to dry. If the disease starts to weaken the stock, so they're worried about lodging in the field, they'll go ahead and harvest, which will increase fuel needed for drying.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Arlen. I think that's all the questions I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hose, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX. A global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform. For insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter, email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.